Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, when and where was the first Haggadah written? This week we're bringing you a special Passover program with something for everyone. There are stories and recipes, but first a little history about the Passover Haggadah. The Haggadah is the book that we read at the Passover Seder, which tells the story of the Exodus from Egypt. There have been printed Haggadot for 5 centuries, but the basic elements have been around for about 2,000 years. I thought that you might be interested in knowing a little more about the history of this book, which has been called the most popular Jewish book of all time. In the 16th century, there were approximately 25 printed versions. This number jumped to 37 in the 17th century, 230 versions in the 18th century, about 1,500 in the 19th century, and over 3,000 versions in the 20th century. The word Haggadah means the telling, and it incorporates passages from several Jewish writings, including the Torah, Talmud, and Midrash. Originally, it was included as parts of the prayer book. The earliest standalone Haggadot were handwritten in Spain in the 13th century. Passover is celebrated not only so that we can remember our liberation from slavery and exodus from Egypt, but, most importantly, that we transmit this history to our children. This is why children have such an important role in the Passover Seder. A literal interpretation of the Second Commandment, the one that speaks against creating images, kept Jews from making books that were illustrated with human forms. But because the Haggadah was directed at children, a tradition arose whereby it is acceptable for them to be illustrated. Of all the books in Jewish religious literature, this is true only of Haggadot. Before the printing press was invented, wealthy Jews would hire artists to create illuminated and illustrated versions of the Haggadah. The Sephardim would illustrate the entire story of Passover at the beginning of their Haggadot, while the Ashkenazis would have pictures throughout. A tradition arose of naming a Haggadah after the town from which it came, Amsterdam, Nuremberg, Mantua, etc. Among the most famous of the early illustrated Haggadot is the Sarajevo Haggadah. Another one of the early Haggadot, certainly the best known of the printed and illustrated ones, was the Prague Haggadah of 1527. It has quaint medieval woodcuts, which are probably the most widely reproduced of any Haggadah illustrations. There are other traditions common to Haggadot, for example, the writing of a commentary, and many Jewish sages have written them. An innumerable number of European Haggadot from the 18th to 20th centuries have just a few lines of text on each page, surrounded by almost an entire page of commentary. At the beginning of the 20th century, major content and translation changes were made. It was hoped that this would increase the interest of the younger generation and make the message of the Haggadah more relevant to modern life. Large amounts of the traditional text were removed and replaced, although full-texted traditional Haggadot were still being introduced. 2 forms stand out. First, the artistically illustrated Haggadot meant as gifts and to entertain, and second, the so-called marketing Haggadot, usually published by food companies or supermarkets and distributed for free, including the appropriate advertising, of course. In the 1940s and 50s, the next evolutionary step in Haggadah history took place. This was the move to incorporate contemporary political realities. While traditional Haggadot expect us to feel as our ancestors felt by looking back in history, the political Haggadot believe that it is only through looking at political situations right now that we will truly be able to relate to the historical enslavement and liberation. Major changes have been made in these Haggadot, both in content and in language. For example, the Hillel Council Haggadah gave us 10 modern plagues, such as ignorance of Jewish values, reluctance of Jews to express themselves culturally and religiously in Jewish terms for fear of being thought un-American, the misunderstandings and prejudice that still exist between national and religious groups, etc. Haggadot were written that focused on the newly formed state of Israel. Some began to speak of the Holocaust and to include prayers of remembrance. In Israel, the many kibbutzim came out with radically altered Haggadot. This idea of politically relevant Haggadot was further developed in the 70s, 80s, and 90s with an outpouring of political Haggadot for specific interest groups: environmental, vegetarian, egalitarian, women, gays, lesbians, etc. Bookstores have started carrying the political Haggadot, and so now they can be found on many Seder tables. 1991 saw the emergence of the next evolutionary step in Haggadah history. It can be called the self-liberation mode. Unlike the traditional and political Haggadot, which focus externally, the belief underlying Haggadot in this category is that for us to feel the enslavement and exodus of our ancestors, we have to turn our focus inward. We have to ask and answer the questions: how do I enslave myself? What actions and feelings of my own are preventing me from being a free person? Related to this are the Haggadot that individuals are compiling for their own use. The compiler cuts and pastes pages or paragraphs from different Haggadot, adds words of their own as appropriate, and thus creates a tailor-made Haggadah. So now that you know a little more about the history and evolution of the Haggadah, I thought I'd tell you a couple of very short Passover stories. I like them because I think that they both reveal typical aspects of Jewish character and tradition. So I thought I'd share them with you. The first one illustrates the kindness and charity of a wise rabbi. A Jew once came to his rabbi and asked if it was permissible to use milk instead of wine for the four cups. Apologetically, he explained that he was too poor to afford wine, but the family owned a goat that produced plenty of milk. In answer, the rabbi reached into his pocket and gave the Jew some money. "Here," he said kindly, "take this and go purchase wine, meat, and fish so your family can observe the holiday properly." When the man had gone, the rabbi explained to his family why he had done this. "When he asked me if he could use milk instead of wine, I immediately understood he could not afford to buy meat. Otherwise, he would never dream of putting dairy products on the table. He was obviously in need of money for the other necessities of Passover as well." This next one is taken from the book The Classic Tales, 4,000 Years of Jewish Lore by Ellen Frankel, and it's called The Gentiles' Impatience. Two beggars, one a Gentile and one a Jew, were good friends. One Passover, the Jew advised the Gentile friend to pretend to be a Jew in order to receive an invitation to a Seder meal. "But I won't know what to do," protested the Gentile. "Just follow the example of your host," the Jew told him. So the Gentile beggar procured an invitation to a Seder and arrived just before sundown. When he smelled the delicious foods and saw the many bottles of wine set out on the table, he was filled with delight. But after he had been sitting for some time, all he received was a glass of wine, which only whetted his appetite further. Then he was given celery soaked in salt water, followed by more wine and then a dry piece of unleavened bread. When he next received a sliver of raw horseradish, his patience finally gave out. He leapt up from the table and stormed out of the house. Enraged, he came to his friend and told him of the host's shameful hospitality. "If you had only waited a little longer," said the Jew, "you would have been treated to a most delicious feast." "But who can wait that long?" complained the Gentile. "If you're going to pretend to be a Jew," smiled his friend, "then you must learn the first requirement of being a Jew. Be patient and trust that the future will be better." And what would a Jewish holiday be without a recipe or two? I'm going to give you two of my favorites, a savory one and a sweet one. The first is for matzah kugel, a savory pudding that's delicious with chicken or beef gravy. You will need 5 matzahs, about a cup of water, 2 onions, 3 eggs, a pinch of pepper, a teaspoon of sugar, a chicken bouillon cube, the size you would use to make 2 cups of broth, and a little oil. Chop the onions and fry them in the oil until they're soft but not too brown. Mash in the bouillon cube. It'll dissolve better that way. Soak the matzah in the water and drain it, but not too dry. Beat the eggs and mix them with the matzah and onion mixture. Add the pepper and sugar and mix it lightly. Grease a 2-quart baking dish and pour in the mixture. Bake it at 350 degrees Fahrenheit, which is about 175 Celsius, for about 45 minutes or until the top is brown. This recipe will serve 6. The next recipe is for what is probably the most evil chocolate dessert I have ever tasted, and it only uses 4 ingredients. 200 grams or 7 ounces of butter or margarine, 200 grams, 7 ounces of dark chocolate, 1 cup of sugar, and 4 eggs separated. Melt the chocolate and butter over medium heat, stirring to make sure the chocolate doesn't burn, or use a double boiler. Let it cool. In a medium-sized bowl, beat the egg whites until soft peaks form. Add 1/2 cup of the sugar and continue beating until the peaks are stiff. In a smaller bowl, beat the egg yolks with the remaining 1/2 cup of sugar until it's thick, pale in color, and twice the original volume. Add the cooled chocolate mixture and mix it thoroughly. The next part is a little tricky. Fold the chocolate egg yolk mixture into the egg whites, being very careful not to stir it so as not to release the air that you've beaten into the whites. Pour it into a greased 9-inch, or 23 centimeter, springform pan and bake it at 325 degrees Fahrenheit, or 160 Celsius, until a crust forms on the top. The top is slightly brown, and it starts to pull away from the edges of the pan. Let it cool before serving it, but don't put it into the refrigerator. Enjoy! Well, I hope you enjoyed our special holiday program. As always, we'd love to hear from you, so please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is EnglishCorner@RadioSefarad.com. And since Passover commemorates our freedom from slavery, I'll leave you now with a Jewish freedom song. Theodor Bekel singing Dona Dona from his CD, Theodor Bekel's Treasury of Yiddish Folk and Theater Songs. See you next week.
Häufen frohlich, da kehrlich, gebunden mit der Strick. Euch in Himmel flieht das Schwerbel, freit sich, dreht sich hin und zurück. Lacht der Wind in Korn, lacht und lacht und lacht, lacht der Opa Toga ganz und unahal den Nahal. Donna, 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 donna. Schreit das Kehl, wo sagt der Poier, wer je heiß dich sein na Kal? Wo's gekennt doch sein na Feuer, wo's gekennt doch sein na Schwall? Lacht der Wind in Korn, lacht und lacht und lacht, lacht der Opa Toga ganz und mal. Kälber tut men binden und men schleppt sie und men schächt. Wer so fliegel flitt a Räuf zu, is bei keinem nit kein Knecht. Lach der Wind in Korn, lacht und lacht und lacht, lacht der Opa Toga ganz und na halbe Nacht. Donna, 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 donna. Donna, 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 donna